This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Back again. It's the Renegade Masters. It's episode 37 of Eurobash. And here we go again. We're in the middle of a tropical rainstorm here at the moment. Far from the sunny shores of Ireland we saw last week.
Summer is coming, Petey.
Oh, my, man, I thought I was going to write that car off on the way over.
Oh, it was crazy. Hailstones in May, only in Ireland.
Yeah. It's a beautiful, disgusting day.
I'm in a pair of shorts, so look.
Yeah, I mean, we had a bit of a light weekend on the MMA action front, so we're not going to be as the episode won't be as long this week because we won't have to go through all the UFCs. There was no Cage Warriors, no KSW.
It was nice though, and I think, you know, we talked about this. I think it would be great if the UFC, you know, and I've said this for a long, long time, they cut so many cards down, and it benefits the fighters also on the card. It puts more eyes on them if there's more time and build up to a fight card. If they actually build it up.
Yeah. I didn't really see much build up for UFC Stockholm over the weekend.
Yeah, no, yeah. Yeah. Like, I wish there was another, like, 2 or 3 weeks off before this 238 card as well the week after. So it's just a good thing. And I think, you know, the UFC obviously needs stars. So I think it'd be a good thing if they just did this more frequently and not had so many events. But what can you do?
Despite the lack of action going on, I was very busy this weekend and with Paddy Hoolan as he got elected. And we'll talk about that bit later. What an amazing feat that is for the Jokestown
one. Do you reckon they vote me and then this side of the pond?
You just have similar followings, like.
I'd say I'm a lot bigger, yeah.
I'd say, like, you know, you're both considered Irish MMA legends, you know?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Right, well, we'll get on to Paddy in a second. Let's look at these headlines. A picture of Conor McGregor appeared last week with his patented left hand in a gauze and some cast. Ariel Helwani tweeted an update about it. I think he's looking towards the end of next year. You know, I'd kind of got a few whispers about this, and I couldn't confirm it. It's very hard to confirm anything with Conor. And that's why I was kind of on the A side that time. I was kind of saying it looks towards the end of 2019, I'd say. And I think that does make sense with Khabib fighting in September. Definitely. And you know, from that, the Tony Robbins interview Conor did that, got a lot of traction. He kind of seems to have acknowledged that he won't get the next crack at Khabib. And so I reckon December is likely, you know, I don't know if it's likely, but it's probably more likely.
Yeah. I agree.
First of all, what did you think of the interview? Because I'm sure, I think this was done last month. I think
it was done last month.
Early April or something. And a lot of reaction to it. Mm. I think it's kind of rough as well that it was recorded like a month ago, and now people are kind of taking it up now and kind of discussing what was said. But one thing I noticed about it, and actually they did a great job on the MMA beat of breaking this down, Luke Thomas, Chuck,
Danny, was it?
Danny and Brian. Mr. Boom himself, who was involved last week, they were kind of talking about, like, isn't it interesting to see the fan whooping and yelling when he's talking about how he won the fight and stuff? Like, I mean, it's very clear that the casual interest is still rightly on McGregor, and he's kind of trying to tell this story about why he should have won. He had an injury, he prepared wrong, he was too defensive. But the reaction to the crowd in that room, they were all eating it. They were all eating it up like hotcakes.
They were, definitely, and that was, you know, it's just sort of Connor's persona, and you know, that's not gone
away. He needs to retell the story, yeah, basically, to sell it.
I think it's very interesting that, and you know, maybe more so in the United States, his popularity is still where it was, and not so much in Ireland. I think that's very evident that his popularity isn't as strong in Ireland as it was.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have gone off him from, obviously, you know,
the various ups and downs.
The ups and downs of what's gone on. We saw the Bellator, you know, the UFC events, all that sort of thing. You know, he's retracted a lot of those statements and things like that, but it is, you know, and that's where I think he's still a vital part for the UFC. As I've said
in
recent weeks with this TV deal, obviously going ESPN online and this subscription service, you know, he's the one going to pull names in. He's still very much that guy in the States in the terms of UFC. So yeah, no, that was interesting to me. But the more interesting part of that interview I found was that he more or less said he was saving himself for another day.
Yes, yeah. I did pick up on that as well. But, you know, there were so many different bits that we didn't go with it in the end. But I saw Pundit Arena ran a piece on it. And, you know, and it is a...
Because it was a face crank. And we often talked about that. The position would have gotten worse for Conor. You know, you could see, I remember he was in this sort of a fetal position before Habib actually took his back. Really interesting, like... You know, it was a sort of a face crank, and he tapped. He realized that he was not going to win that fight at that point. And I think, you know, maybe a sensible thing for Conor to do.
Yeah, I mean, there is. It's not as punished in our sport as it is in boxing. Say when you have a quit, they call it a quitter in boxing. It's kind of, it's so like you get slated for your whole life when you do that. But there is so many outs in MMA, and I don't know, you know, this live to fight another day. He's in the heat of the moment. He's talking and stuff, and I was actually talking to Sean Sheehan, and he made a really good point to me. He was like, do you remember in the documentary, right, that Graham and the guys did? And after the Nate Diaz fight, he's sitting there and he's calling himself, you tapped, you're a bitch or something. He's talking to himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, Sean's like, it's kind of like that moment, isn't it? Because you're seeing him kind of acknowledge that.
It is, but maybe there was an acceptance after the Habib fight in terms that, you know, if you compare it to the Diaz fight, he was in probably more of a precarious position, and you know, you would have expected him to tap. Whereas Habib, it didn't really look like.
Oh no, that looked really legit for me.
No. I'm saying no. When he had the face crank on, you wouldn't expect him to tap from that.
I don't know, man.
Well,
it's hard to tell from them because sometimes like they're actually driving the chin into your neck. So it's like, it's going to be a blood choke as well. It just doesn't look like one. I don't really know, but it is an interesting thing of what you're saying. I do agree that was a big point. Like when he said that, I was like, whoa.
I was listening to where you're sitting now, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a bit weird. Yeah.
Feed me more of this.
But look, I think the big takeaway for me is, when this man wants to retell a story, everybody wants to listen. You could tell that the people in that room were fully, they were like, let's do it again. You know?
But do people want to listen in Ireland as much? I don't think so.
And it didn't really get a lot of traction over here, I noticed.
Yeah.
You know, apart from the Pundit Arena articles and stuff. And when they put them out, they were out first, in fairness. They were the first articles I saw about it. And then after that, I saw the tabloids kind of picking it up. But,
Interesting.
And another thing.
I do agree with you, though, about the end of the year. I think that makes sense.
And of course, Ariel's tweet also highlighted that he is having that contractual situation over the subscriptions, and we predicted that.
Yeah.
You know, I think he did anyway. I think he noted that in the tweet. Artem and Paulie got into it when we were recording last week's episode, so we didn't see it until it was over. I actually remember I was leaving and you were like, whoa, what's after happening here? Yeah. Paulie Malignaggi spat on Artem Lobov. Now, what I'll say to you is you have never been a fan of Bare Knuckle. You have not been a fan, but this is hugely, hugely, polarizing, and it's hugely, hugely popular. Like, I mean, people are talking about this fight in my group of friends that have absolutely no interest in the week to week MMA events. But
the lads in the office were all talking about it.
Yeah. And I mean, here's the thing, right? Artem hasn't really done anything wrong here. Like, I mean, Paulie is kind of shaping this as boxing v MMA, and
Paulie's an idiot, man.
I have a feeling that it's really lowering the tone for boxing. I mean, if he's fighting the corner of boxing, he's spitting on people, talking about pissing in people's mouths. Like, I mean, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, to spit on anyone is the lowest thing. And I think, you know, I said that to you last week. It's absolutely vile. It's grotesque. And you can talk about selling fights all you want, but to stoop that low and actually spit in someone's face, it's the biggest insult you can ever pay a man. And you know, the guy's a clown. I don't like the guy. I think he's always brought this MMA versus boxing thing into it. he was talking about that all MMA fans are idiots and all this sort of stuff. And he's the one bringing this narrative up time after time after time. He's done loads of boxing interviews in the build up to obviously Mayweather McGregor, and was an analyst obviously on that as well. And I'm saying obviously
this
a lot.
One thing I wanted to say to you. Is he at risk of losing that analyst position by behaving like that?
Yeah, he should be severely reprimanded for actions like that. You know,
but it is a separate contract. You know, it's a different life, basically. It's a different revenue stream.
It is, but I'm sure they're, you know, from his employer's point of view, it's gross misconduct to behave like that in the public light, I would imagine.
Definitely wouldn't do him favors,
sure.
You know.
Exactly. And to do something like that, and as I said there, along the lines of when he was in the build-up, says he kept on bringing up that narrative. It was like he was jealous that Conor McGregor was coming in, and obviously they sparred together, and we saw that footage and things like that.
And we'll hear about it forever.
It is absolutely, you know, it's just infuriating for a guy to behave like that. I mean, I was really angry when I saw him spin.
A lot of people were, and I will say this again. I believe this is working in Artem's favor so much, man. He's becoming the guy. And this is what Paulie basically asked for when he went down the boxing v MMA road. Mm. People in MMA are lifting Artem up now. Like they want to see him go and take Paulie's head off.
And I think we talked about this as well last week when we were off air. We were just sort of watching him hitting the microphone as well, which is actually quite amusing. I find that quite funny when he just.
I thought that was man. I was pissed. Like,
yeah, it annoyed me because he's a plonker.
No, but like Artem's face probably isn't like you know all there from his last fight still, and he's cracking him with metal objects. Like I mean.
Yeah.
Is this classic baiting a guy into fight aggressively? I think it actually works in people's favour to fight aggressively.
That's literally what I was about to say because, you know, Paulie's always had problems with his hands. He's broken his hands multiple times over his boxing.
He's not
career.
Known as a knockout puncher, you know.
He's not a powerful puncher.
Yeah.
You know, Ricky Hatton was landing like a bloody dagger on him, and Ricky isn't the hardest hitter either. Mm. So, yeah. And I noticed that about bare knuckle boxing. We've obviously seen it in the last RTM fight when he fought Jason Knight. You know, technique goes out the window a lot of time.
Yeah.
And that will definitely work in RTM's favour. I think Paulie, obviously, you know, people are going to go with the technical edge, but he doesn't pack a punch.
Yeah.
So that's where I think RTM could really catch him. If Paulie goes in with that attitude as well, he's just going to go off his game plan, and that could really work in RTM's favour, as you said.
But it seems to be harder to get a clean KO with bare knuckle than it does when you have a glove on. Probably just about the measured kind of distance you're kind of covering there, like the way the letter's hitting you, it's kind of spreading the volume of the punch over more of an area. But you know, I think it's compelling in the way that, you know, Paulie obviously is a more regimented boxer, he's a lot better fundamentals, and if this goes the distance and he's having success just touching him, that could really open up a face.
I'm just not comfortable with the whole bare knuckle thing anyway, and I think, you know, probably for our team to get back in there so soon after that absolutely hideous face that he had after that Jason Nice.
Still a handsome fight.
He is, yeah. I'm not saying he isn't, but you know, I'd like to see. I just don't like this sport.
Do you think it's going to have a negative impact on MMA? That's always been your key fear.
Yeah, that's why I'm annoyed about it. When we're trying to legitimize a sport like mixed martial arts, which obviously isn't even, you know, regulated in our island here. And then we've a lot of MMA outlets, you know, covering this stuff. And I can understand, you know, two big names.
Biggest fight of June.
Yeah,
it really is. Like, I mean, in terms of, it's a bigger fight in June than any other MMA fight anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, yeah, it probably is.
I'm seeing more traction for this fight than I am for Tyson Fury's next fight.
Yeah, but we're tainting our own sport by getting behind this, I think. It just goes to the barbaric sort of level. Of, you know, when, you know, mixed martial arts was in its early days and there was no weight classes. You know.
I know, but we would have criticized people for talking about MMA like that back then.
Yeah, it's a different sport. Like,
is a different sport. I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, the crossover thing sort of annoys me, and I just don't like it. It doesn't sit well with me. You know, it just shines a bad light. You know, obviously the perception as well. And I know that's something we've battled with for years as well. But when you see guys with faces like that, you know, on a regular basis, it's not just one or two fights. There's plenty of fights.
Yeah, it's shocking for people, you know.
But do you really want to see that?
Here's the question. Are you going to watch that fight?
Probably not.
What do you mean, probably not? Or no?
Because I've taken a stance that I've watched sort of highlights and stuff.
I'll definitely watch
a number of fights. I probably will listen. it just doesn't sit well with me, really. You won't see me tweeting about it. You won't see me, you know, even here. I don't even really want to talk about it, to be honest with you. Like, that's how sort of much. And listen, a lot of fighters have reached out to me as well, and they totally agree with me. I put up a tweet a number of weeks ago, before that fight, before Artem's fight against Jason Knight, and, you know, a number of well-known people on this side of the pond are totally against it as well.
And that helps. Yeah. I think it actually helps when it's so polarizing.
It does.
Like, I mean, as much as you were making a very serious point that you have, that also feeds the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I know, it's a two-edged sword. But
yeah, you want to put it out there.
Yeah, yeah. This is how I feel about it.
You want to go, boom. That's my lineup.
I can't wait for it. Anyway, Fabian Edwards has signed a new... I grew up this way. Fabian Edwards has signed a new deal with Bellator, and he will be facing Jonathan Bosoku, who's on a five-fight win streak at Bellator London. But I can tell you straight away, as soon as I broke the news of this fight, everybody's saying, where's the step up? As you said, you know, where is the step up here? And I mean, I understand Fabian 7-0 and he's had trouble getting people to fight him in the past. But when you see Kozlov and Steenis and Mike Shipman on that card, you're kind of going, you know, was there options there? I don't know. Obviously, Fabian wants these big challenges. He's always saying he does. But certainly I don't think people would see Jonathan, with all due respect, as much of a challenge as we said, Lee Chadwick. That's where the measuring stick is going to be set here now. We need to step up from Lee Chadwick. Mm. And his last fight wasn't that either, but against Falco Neto, you know?
Yeah, but you see that, and we mentioned the Lee Chadwick fight there. You know, Lee's a very well-respected guy here. Maybe, as you just said 2 minutes ago, that people just won't want to fight him. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes in terms of guys turning down fights.
Yes. It's incredibly difficult to keep track of that from our point of view.
But Fabian's constantly said that. And you know, to go out and destroy a guy like Luke Chadwick in the way he did.
Luke Chadwick's a football player.
Sorry, Luke Chadwick. Lee Chadwick. I'm thinking of X-Man United player.
Lee is far better looking than Luke Chadwick.
that is true. Was incredibly impressive. And I'm sure that's going to put a lot of people off because, you know, we've seen Lee, obviously, beforehand.
And then afterwards coming out and beating Mulhern. Yeah, well, like, that's, Mulhern's, like, a very underrated fighter as far as I'm concerned.
What I mean. So it could be a point here where he's not being able to get these fights. Guys don't want to fight him, so he has to settle for something and just stay active. And maybe this is why he's taking this fight.
I do feel, though, him being on that Bellator London card is very important with Shipman and Van Steenis being there. I feel like they need to match him with the winner of that fight.
Yeah.
I think that's gotta be the way.
And it's good to have him on the card anyway. I think he's gonna bring eyes.
Yeah, and he's getting more, I see him getting more active on social media. Yeah. And the thing, like, he doesn't have the same issue with Leon, as Leon does with kind of getting through to the fans. And Fabian always laughs about it. He goes, I'm a dickhead sometimes and people seem to like that. And Leon's just everything, Mr. Do Everything, always says the right thing and people just aren't getting behind it. Even when he tweeted, he was on our show last week and he talked about he wanted to fight Lawler and Dos Anjos. He put out a tweet. And just to read the comments underneath it, it's crazy how people view him, you know?
I don't have a clue what the buzz is there. With, you know, if that happened here, there'd be uproar.
Like that three-piece and a soda thing. Oh, my God. Like, lads, do you really think you're original writing that underneath a post? Like, fair enough, one is, but 18 is writing it. Like,
idiots. There's so many idiots online. And
it's the most casual thing ever when you see guys doing that. Or do you know what the other thing is? if I tweet an article about, like, anyone... They always have the "who the fuck is that guy" underneath it. You're like, all right, mate. You watch.
Run along, son. That's what I always say. Run along.
I don't say anything. I just go. Fuck him. I apologize. But, no. I feel sorry for your mother.
$5. I'll give you a cheeseburger. I won't say any more. All right. No, you know, I think, you know, if we're going to talk about Leon here, it's just a piss take, man. The fans not getting behind him. He's one of your own in the UK. Support the guy. He's what, 7 unbeaten. Look at the guys he's beaten. Holy mother of God. Just get the guy a bloody fight, fight that he deserves. Dana White, Sean Shelby, Mick Maynard, shame on you.
Oh, you're dead right. That's how we felt for a long time here. Cage Warriors 106 has a couple of new fights. Sam Creasy is the last title fight announced. He'll be fighting for flyweight gold against Sam.
I love watching him fight.
But Ian, Sam Creasy.
Yeah.
He's really good. And I mean, he's got back to winning ways after that Nathan Grayson loss. And, you know, Nathan fought fantastically that night. And even in Nathan's debut then with Bellator, he looked great against Cal Eleanor. Mm. Cal Eleanor managed to get the submission. It was a tremendous fight though. So, yeah, I think Sam and that flyweight belt, they've kind of got a date with destiny at this stage. But it's going to be interesting to see because, as we know, Cage Warriors titles are the pathway to the UFC, but I don't know. As Nathan left when he got the belt because he was like, well, that's no longer an option. So it's interesting to see how that will go. Alex Lahore will take on Aaron Khalid. There was a bit of talk there between Alex. It seems like Reese is saying, and Alex said, you know, he was offered that fight and he didn't take it. He felt like Aaron was the guy who could get him there quicker. Interesting.
Yeah, I do find it interesting. I think the fact Lahore is coming off a loss as well, it seems a bit weird, some of the comments coming out from his end saying to Reese that, you know, you're not a big enough name. Well, listen, I think it would have been a very, very good matchup, and one that
they have the
probably,
same list of honours as well, like in terms of Bama champions,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and I think it would have been a really good fight for both the lads, because it's that sort of, you know, you could main event that.
Look how eager Reese was to
a lot
face,
of people getting behind that fight.
Look how eager was Reese was to get that fight made. Like, I mean, that would be an unbelievable fight. And I think Aaron Khalid and Alex is going to be a great fight too. Yeah, that definitely. That night is just going to be insane, man. Night of champions.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I think, you know, Reese, whatever he's going to do next in terms of, you know, he's been open with you and when we had him on the podcast here, and it very much does look like he's gone to 170.
Oh yeah, 100%.
The weight cut, you know, I did a video of him last year before the Brazier fight, I think it was.
Can't stop being kicked now.
It's just so hard for the guy to make 55. And I think, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see if that touch of death can be translated over.
I think it generally does when you go up to the heavier weight class, you know, it tends to be right there, and he's going to have more volume. Like, I felt like at 55, Reese just knew he had that physical capability to touch someone once and end the night, and he still showed he had it. But I think if you can imagine that with way more volume, like, that's the way I'm expecting this to go, and that's dangerous, dangerous situation for any opponent of his.
Definitely, and I think I'm really interested to see the cardio, the translation over. Reese is a guy that can obviously go and keep going.
I just hope he gets his burger habit together
But even if you looked at his last fight, how big he was getting. He's still a grown kid, like, he's only 22, is Reese.
Can't stop eating burgers, man.
He's just a big fat burger head.
He needs to stop eating them, man. We're going to be going up to 205 soon if he doesn't get a call.
Fatty Reese.
That's what they call him. That's unfortunately what they call him. Now, another thing. Mr. Graham Boylan, he was on Instagram the other day and he said something very interesting.
Graham wasn't on Instagram, was he?
Oh, Graham.
He loves
Insta.
It, doesn't he?
Graham is the man on Insta, and he put up a picture of the UFC.
Is he riding horses?
UFC's logo. The old one, I might add. Not the new one, Graham. Just sort that out for next time. And he says, a new UFC contract, new signing in my inbox today. Who you got? Well, who you got, Noel? I believe we probably have the same person here.
It's time to go to the seaside, I reckon. Jack Shore.
Yeah, I do too.
Do you like my little
I don't know what that meant, but I enjoy it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, God, shit, yeah. I have tried to confirm this.
You'd imagine so.
And I haven't heard anything back, which makes me even more.
You'd imagine so. You'd imagine so.
Well, he deserves it.
100%.
The man is a savage. And
the Welsh invasion continues.
Look, I think the guy is class. I think he's all class. Yeah. He's clearly ready. He's a young guy. He can have a huge adventure now on this new platform. He has done well. He's done brilliantly for Cage Warriors. He has made them a new kind of a port of call there in Cardiff. And look at the amount of talent they have left there in Cardiff.
Yeah.
And even Jack said to me, Mason Jones is there just to pick up the reins. Like, he's emerging in that title conversation at 55.
What are they putting in the water in Cardiff?
I went down and just did a seminar a couple of years ago. And
was that it?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
You can ask Jack there next time you're talking to him. He'll tell you.
Realize that.
Yeah, of course.
Unreal.
Silly question, really.
Yeah, it was.
but yeah, finally, Paddy Hoolan elected the South Dublin Council. Man, what a man. I spent 2 days with Paddy, and you know, 2 years ago, Paddy's career was completely ended. He had no options. His gym closed. Everything was breaking down around him. And to be there and see him kind of have such a big successful moment in a new career. Mm. It's inspirational. He's an amazing person. He really is. You can see how passionate he is. Like, for me, I'm not political at all. I learned actually more about the voting system being with Paddy over the last 2 days than I ever did.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
No, I'm not either.
But I don't know shit, as I said, about politics. I make sure I vote because that's what we're meant to do, because people died for that, right? But Paddy speaking about what he wants to do, you can tell he's so passionate about it. And this is the same as he was with mixed martial arts. And he's not a guy to lie down, never has been. And I really hope he has a fantastic political career. And it was just really nice to be there with him and his Sinn Féin colleagues who are explaining how these things work to me. And obviously Chelsea and baby Seamus as well. A really, really proud moment for everyone involved in MMA as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, congratulations, Paddy.
And I think it's a good thing, as Paddy said to me in his interview afterwards, like, he's going to be trying anything he can to help this push for regulation. Yeah. And, you know, this is a great sign. He's obviously helping Andy Ryan with the coaching on the Emma team, and I'm hearing that's going brilliantly. There's a real good team atmosphere there. Yeah. And something that Andy was really passionate about, him, Barry and Paddy, I think, are heading it up.
Andy's good at that. He brings the fun element together as well. And it doesn't feel like a chore, even though obviously they're doing, you know, very, very high level training.
He'd be very serious about selection. Yeah, he's very 100%. Serious about all that stuff. There's no way a lad who was one of his lads is just getting on the team for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look, he's been to the top of the world in terms of judo. So I think we're in very safe hands there. Right, well, that's all of our news, I guess. So we'll go to the first interview of the day, and that's with Mr. Volkan Ozdemir. No time. He takes on Ilir Latifi this weekend. If you remember, in a recent interview he did, maybe on Eurobash, maybe it was at the London event, he was telling us the last kind of person he would want to face is Ilir because they have a relationship. They had trained together for a long time in the States. So very interesting. That is the fight that's being made. So we got his thoughts. He gave us an update on his visa situation. And also his take on what's happening with John Jones and Thiago Silva. Does he think he has Thiago Santos? Does he have a chance? So we'll leave you with Volkan. We'll be back in about 15. And now, as advertised, we are joined by former light heavyweight title contender, Mr. Volkan Ozdemir. Volkan, long time since I spoke to you last time. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I'm enjoying my time in Switzerland. Now I'm training here, so it's great to be back home.
Oh, you've done the whole camp in Switzerland, have you?
Yeah, now I've been doing actually my last camp and this camp in Switzerland. This one I also have been moving around a little bit, you know, to Turkey, some jiu-jitsu with Galvao, and then I went to Norway also to train with some guys that are also specialized in Greco-Roman wrestling. So just to have some good, you know, partners for me to reproduce the style of my next opponent.
Yes, absolutely, and we'll talk about Ilir in a few minutes. But I was just wondering, you know, the last time we saw you out there was in London, of course, and you came out and you graciously spoke to the media afterwards. You weren't happy with that split decision loss, you know, you felt you won the fight. Have you gone back to watch that fight? Do you still feel as passionate as you do about that should have been a win for you that night?
Yeah, I've watched the fight, you know, a few times, but then, you know, I don't want to lose time in watching this and, you know, losing my energy and my focus on this fight. I think that was a bullshit decision, and, you know, I stand by it. You know, I guess, you know, he was also a way to keep building this guy up, but I think I did everything I had to do during the fight. Obviously, you know, I should have done more, so I should not leave the decision in the hands of the judges. And this is something, you know, I definitely took advice from, and my next fight is going to be a statement.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, like, is it hard for you, Volkan, because obviously we know that you're an elite fighter. You fought for the title. The way you emerged in the UFC was absolutely astronomical. But is that hard, you know, the fact that you're on a three-fight skid now? I mean, does that challenge you mentally in a new way? Because, let's be honest, up until this moment of your career, you had been starching guys, mostly in the first round. Do you find this is a new obstacle for you to overcome? How do you feel about the situation?
Well, it's definitely a different situation I am in right now. Now I have, you know, this losing record now that I need to break. You know, I need to get back into my winning streak. Feel good. I feel great. I also felt my last fight was the last fight was mine. So it's not like, you know, I've been having those losses. Anthony Smith also had a great fight up until the very end of the fight until I got taken down and choked. The Reyes fight was also, you know, really, really good for me. It's not like I had those bad losses, you know, knockouts, and, you know, like you feel bad or you look bad. So this is something also that doesn't really bother me that much in a way that I haven't been put into too much difficult situation, you know, during those fights. So this is also something that gives me strength. You know, I know I'm on the right way. I just have to work on a few things, and that's what I'm doing right now.
Right, right. And I know one of the times we had you on the show before, I think it might have been just before the Anthony Smith fight, and we were talking about you know, potential opponents for the future. And I think I remember you saying Iller was a guy you didn't want to face. And I think it was because you kind of had previous experience training with him or something. Maybe you can tell me if I'm right or wrong on that. But I can remember Iller wasn't a guy that you were mm-hmm. jumping up and down to face. Why was that?
Well, actually, that was exactly the thing. I trained with Iller in 2011. My first time I was in the U.S., and we trained together for 5 weeks. We you know, really hit it off, and you know, we stayed friends, so we talk from time to time. But actually, I was, you know, in this situation with the UFC. Now it was my, you know, third fight that I lost in a row, and also because of my visa situation, I cannot fight in the US right now.
Right.
Then I need to fight in the European show, and I wanted really to be back on track, because I was really feeling disgusted by my last the outcome of my last fight. So I told the UFC that I really wanted to fight in Stockholm. Stockholm was like 2-3 months away from my last fight, and they told them, you know, the only possible opponent for this matchup was him and Manuel, you know, Manuel that I beat already anyway, and Iller, and then you know, the choice was pointed out onto Iller.
And I mean, how do you go about that? Do you contact Iller to tell him, like, you know, this has been offered, should I take this, or is it strictly business? When the name comes up, you've got to accept.
Yeah, actually, one of my coach from Turkey told me also, his manager contacted him, and he told me that they were fine with it, and you know, it's just business, you know, at the end of the day. You know, I don't wish him harm, and you know, it's like we're colleagues, you know, like, let's point it that way. We're going to be colleagues on this night. We're going to be earning money together, and, you know, maybe the best man win.
Is it different, like, when you know a guy so well? Have you been in this situation before, when you fought a guy that you've trained with, that you got on with well, or is this a new thing for you?
So I've been fighting a guy that I trained with, but I actually trained with him, like, maybe twice, you know, so that wasn't really a big thing. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it's going to be really different, you know. It's going to be a different mindset for me to enter the fight. No hatred towards him, no nothing, just respect, and it's going to be like, you know, a good war, you know, like, it's going to be like a good game, you know, like, we're going to give it the best of our abilities, and, you know, just bring the best out of each other.
And I mean, you spoke about this earlier on, you know, training specifically for the Greco-Roman style that Iller likes to bring. He's a fantastic wrestler, a great grappler, as we know. And what were them training sessions like? Is that what you took from them experiences, that he was just an exceptionally strong grappler?
Yeah, so I've been training with this guy that's an up-and-coming fighter. You know, it's probably going to be in the UFC soon, Martin Hamlet, and it was a good it's a good way to prepare myself also to face Iller, because you know, obviously Greco-Roman wrestler are different from college wrestler or freestyle wrestler, so it's good to have this different feeling also to when you face one of them, and that was the best way also to get ready for Iller. He's a really, really strong wrestler too, so that was perfect for me to do my camp up there in Norway.
I like the way, you know, the UFC are keeping you close to these title conversations. Like, look at the opponents you faced. I mean, Daniel Cormier is the champion. I mean, the guys you've lost to, Daniel Cormier is the champion. Anthony Smith is, like you, a title contender. Dominic Reyes is an up-and-coming guy. I feel like Iller Latifi has been knocking on the door of that title conversation for a long time. So, I mean, in that respect, it is a good matchup for you, right? Like, I mean, it's a positive matchup in terms of where Iller is in the division.
Yeah, obviously, I've been fighting a lot of top guys, like, non-stop. My first fight was a top ring guy, and then I've been, you know, after my losses, I had Anthony Smith, who was on the tear, you know, just two former champions. Then Dominic Reyes was undefeated also. And I think Iller is the first fighter that I fight that coming out of a loss, you know.
Yes.
So it's also like a little... I'm not saying a little break, but it's, you know, definitely a different situation right now, because before, like, all those people facing me are like on the road, you know, like, and that's what they they're doing, and now Ilir is facing me, and it's gonna be like the first guy that is gonna be like in a different situation also.
Yes, and is there any fear? I mean, when you're on a 3-fight skid, and not that, you know, I think that way, but like, you know, yesterday we had the news of Elias Teodoro, who was on a, you know, a good run with the UFC. Obviously, he's coming off a loss this time, but, you know, he got cut and everybody's kind of wondering what's going on there. Now, I know that you're known to have a far more exciting style than Elias, but, you know, given the fact that you're on a 3-fight skid, is there any fear at all, Volkan, that, you know, if you lose this fight, it might be time up with the UFC?
I don't really think so because, you know, I've been presenting myself available for the UFC, you know, all the time. I've been taking fights on short notice. You know, I've been facing only the top guys, you know, and I think I have a exciting fight. You know, I'm not playing it safe. I never play it safe, and I'm going for the knockouts. And I think that's lots of things that play a role in the process, you know, with the UFC. And obviously, you want to be somebody that they can count on. You know, that's something for sure. So you know, there is also the level of opposition you're facing, and also the way you face the opposition, and you know how you handle all of this.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. No, I agree with you, actually. I think, and because of your exciting showings, I think, you know, a lot of people want to see you in there all the time. So I do agree. And, you know, when I look at this card, there is so many fights going on in the light heavyweight division. This is a big night for the light heavyweight division. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that's actually crazy for us. A lot of things are going to be moving now in the ranks after that night. Manua is fighting Rakic Rilo for like a really good talent, you know, like an up and coming guy. Me and Rotisi, and then, you know, top of the division will be Gustafsson and Smith. And this is going to be also good because now it's been two people that's already faced John Jones for the belt. So I guess even if one of them win, I don't think they're going to get like a title shot right next after the fight. So maybe, you know, who knows, like how the fight is going to go, but you know, it's maybe if it's a huge fight, it's going to be a statement, and things going to change, but you know, it's going to be good for the division. You know, it's going to be a good night.
Yeah, it probably makes your win even more valuable if you get the win because of all the activity in the division, right? Because that's going to be a big story on Sunday, you'd imagine, like what happened to 205 in Stockholm, given that there's 4 fights on.
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Smith is definitely a guy that I want to get my revenge on. And Gustafsson, I've been wanting to fight this guy for a long time too. So definitely, one of the winners will be, you know, potentially one of my next opponents.
Yes, and I got to ask, you know, obviously the visa issue must stem back to that, the situation you were in last year with the, I thought everything was sorted out with this. Is this something that's still hanging over you? Do you hope to get that sorted out soon? Is that in the process of happening?
So everything is finished now. Now we just have to wait on the visa to be processing, and this takes, you know, time. But the visa is processing right now, and we just have to wait. So it's kind of a, I don't really know how long I have to wait still, but you know, that's my position right now.
I hope it gets sorted out for you soon, Volkan. I know that's obviously a big block when you can't fight in the US, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of cards, you know, outside of the US too. There is some European cards sometimes, and Canada and Brazil and stuff. But actually, the biggest factor for me is like training. You know, I want to be training in the US with my team, and you know, like those best team, you know, best team in the world. Most of them are in the US, and we also have, you know, like the UCPI, you know, a place I could go, you know, for some treatment and you know, like stuff like that. So definitely, it will be good once I will be able to come back.
I got to ask you your opinion on the next title match in the division with Thiago Santos and John Jones. I see a lot of people have different opinions on this. A lot of people seem to think that Thiago's wild man kind of style and his crazy striking approach could cause Jones a lot of problems. How do you feel about it? Do you feel like it's going to be another one-sided win for Jones, or do you feel like Santos can really bring something to the table that will trouble him?
So I really think you have to really put pressure on Jones, you know, to make him comfortable, you know, because Jones is finding, you know, like at a really slow pace, you know, and he's usually like building his own pace, and once you fell for it, you know, you're in his game. And actually, I think it's all about bringing up the pace. And I think Santos really doesn't care about it, and he's really wild. So this is going to be one of his value, you know, that he could bring into the fight. Although I still see, you know, Jones winning that fight. I think Jones has a lot of tools, you know, like in between everything, you know, his wrestling, his ground game, and his striking. I think he's going to be able to handle Santos.
Right, that's very interesting. It's very interesting. And just finally, Volkan, like, I mean, having gone on that brilliant run at the start of your UFC career and now being on this skid, do you believe now, with all the experience you've gained from, you know, all of these fights, do you believe your next run towards that title will be even stronger than your first?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we keep evolving all the time, but also the sport keeps evolving. So you have to evolve faster than everybody. You have to be ahead of the game, and you know, of course, you have to catch up in all the techniques you're missing. So that's really, you know, like something you have to be aware of. You know, you have to be like, you should be dangerous in any position. You know, like any stance. You know, like lefty, southpaw, you know, like orthodox, or on the ground, on the wrestling, you know, so that's something that's really going to make you really efficient, and that's how you're evolving as a best man, and that's the way to be champion, I think.
Volkan, thank you so much, as always, for your time. I cannot wait to see you back in there in Stockholm. I'll be over on Wednesday, so I'll make sure to say hello when I'm over there, my friend.
Cool, yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, all the best, yeah. Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Thank you, bye.
Great, as always, to speak to Mr. Volkan Uzdemir. I'm looking forward to that fight. And let's have a look at that card now while we're at it, sure. I love the thing about this card I like the most is the how much movement we're going to see in the 205 division. There's four fights in that division, and there's a lot of interest. Alexander Gustafsson v. Anthony Smith is the main event. The co-main event, as we just talked to, Volkan Uzdemir against Ilir Latifi. Then you have Jimmy Manoa against a guy I feel like will be in the title conversation someday, is Alexander Rakic, who was unbeaten in the UFC so far. Also, towards the end of the card, you've got Darko Stosic, a guy nobody's really talking about. This guy, he's an absolute animal. He's taking on Devin Clark, and you know, Darko isn't the biggest fan of the media from what I've gathered in Hamburg and stuff like this, but he is an absolute animal. He is.
Rakic beat Clark as well.
Yeah.
Spelt him on the card.
Yeah, yeah. But, and Alexander looks really, really good, it has to be said. Alexander Gustafsson v. Anthony Smith. Let's take a... What does this fight mean?
Nothing.
Because neither of them can fight Jones next. They've just both recently lost to Jones. So what are we taking from this?
I don't know. I'm not interested really in a lot of the fights in this card. I think, you know, especially with the light heavyweight thing there. There's a lot of guys that realistically is, you know, Jimmy, you know, what's Jimmy a gatekeeper now? You know, he's three straight losses in a row. He's not even a gatekeeper. You've Uzdemir,
who obviously on a three fight skid as well. Ilir is coming off a loss to Corey Anderson.
Yeah, it's just very, you can't see these guys ever being a world champion, and that.
I don't know about that. I mean,
I'm talking about the guys that have lost there, the guys I've named, you know, like,
Anthony,
you
know, and Volkan, Alexander.
Jimmy, Alexander, Anthony, Rakic, possibly down the line in the future, a guy, maybe this is a culminating.
But this is the problem.
Him.
This is a problem for the light heavyweight division, yeah, in general, isn't it?
Like, it is. And I think, you know, Alexander.
Which one?
Gustafsson,
okay.
You know, you know, where does he go? Like, maybe.
Well, it's obvious why he's on top of the Swedish card.
Yeah,
you know?
I can understand that, yeah. 100%. Don't get me wrong, but should he have made his bet with heavyweight here?
I don't know.
He's chasing that gold. That's been his career-long aim. He doesn't, to be world champion.
He doesn't look to me like he can last at a heavy as a heavyweight. Like he's not big enough.
I agree, but
he's very tall. Like, but he's a bit slight.
But
like,
what's his purpose?
There's a reason why John Jones isn't going. Yeah, I want to fight Daniel Cormier at 265. Yeah. You know, like there's a reason for that. And I think if John Jones isn't interested, I don't know how the hell Alexander would be.
But what is Alexander's?
You're thinking in terms of options, like.
Yeah, what, no, you know, if he wants to be remembered as a world champion, what's his legacy? Where, you know, he's not going to get that at 205 pounds, in my opinion, anytime soon.
It's unlikely to even get an option for it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the truth. It is 100%. So, like, I mean, this kind of happens though. Like, I remember Gustafsson was pretty much, you know, he was kind of like, oh, they'd love to see the Jones rematch the last time he went to Sweden. Then he put on that performance against Teixeira and suddenly it's like, wow, look what he did. Like, if he goes in, right, and he gets rid of Anthony Smith very quickly, that's a big statement. I don't know. It's not going to put him as the next guy to fight for the title. I completely agree with you there. But it is a big statement nonetheless. Like, I mean, it does make him a fixture in that conversation, but it's very unlikely. That
it does, you know, maybe they're just waiting, counting down the days till John Jones moves up to heavyweight, which I see as an inevitability in the next year or two, in my opinion. Anyway, I think, you know, John could even possibly fight the winner of DC and he doesn't want it. Listen, John changes his mind like the weather.
I feel the same way about that as well, but I don't think he is going to fight Cormier at 265. Heavyweight, sorry, I keep saying 265.
Well, Miocic is going to beat Cormier this time.
certainly looked that way last time.
Until he poked his eyes out. Gouged them out, which a lot of people seem to not talk about because they like Daniel Cormier so much.
How long are you and Stipe best mates?
Long, long time.
But
hey, how you doing, Stipe?
Give us a shout.
I'm good man. Stipe, so how do you think, you know, this fight? It's a fascinating matchup of styles. Oh, yeah, good fight, man.
Great interview. Stipe.
Yeah, brilliant.
So Uzdemir and Latifi is a similar situation, as we said, with both guys coming off a loss. But I just have a feeling that, you know, there's interesting matches to be made after this event. I know maybe not right now. I mean, if you're talking to me about the most captivating 205 fight there, it's Manu and Rakic, without a doubt.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, a fan spectacle.
Yeah.
It probably is. It's probably.
And it's the litmus test. It's the big litmus test for Rakic.
It is. And listen, all great respect to Jimmy, lovely guy. I like Jimmy. It'd be good, I think, if Rakic for the division maybe came out, made a big statement and spiced himself up. And
I think the table is set for him to have a big night, you know?
I do, but I just find it a little bit stale at the top, this card.
Of course. I'm actually interested in the fights themselves. Away the ramifications and all that stuff. I'm actually interested in them. And the thing I'll say about Rakic is he's shown us so many different things that he can do. Like against Ledette, I can remember he kind of described his performance as a Cain Velasquez performance against Ledette, because he wanted to show he could grapple.
Cain.
Because a lot of people thought he was simply a striker. And then, of course, against Devin Clark, that spinning back fist, after he got that knee to the face, if you remember, it was an illegal strike and he got up and won. It was absolutely unbelievable. I feel like Rakic is a guy that can definitely go the whole way in terms of, he could be a European front runner as far as I'm concerned at 205. Like, as in, if we're prospecting the next title challenger, I think it's him.
Yeah, good call.
I agree with that. I love this fight. Makwan Amerikani versus Fishy.
Yeah, it is good.
And Fishy's going to be pissed off because he can't watch the Champions League final, let's say. I don't know, actually. I think he's a red. I'm not too sure.
Sure, listen, we all have Tottenham win anyway.
Go on, me dad.
I'm a Spurs fan for the week.
My dad's Spurs
fan.
Well,
then that's another reason why I'm a Spurs fan.
Go on, Nemo.
Nemo, I'm a Spurs fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is an interesting fight. I can't say that. I was going to say that a couple of weeks ago. But it will be very, very interesting to see where this fight goes. I expect it to be probably played out in the deck.
Yeah, well, I think both of the guys, once they're in top position, are extremely dominant. We saw against Fishgold there in his last fight, he had the submission win. He struck with Calvin Kattar for his debut. And look, that's a madman. Fishgold goes, right, fuck it. Yeah. Like, I'm going to do it this way. And then, of course, he goes back to his route one style there in the last time. And he gets the submission win. Like, that works. We always knew that about Chris. When he was the lightweight champion of Cage Warriors, maybe he wasn't the most exciting, spectacular fighter in the world. But my God, he was efficient and he got the job done. I think this is a battle of top position. That's why
I agree with you. And I think
I give the striking edge to Fishy.
Yeah, I would as well. Definitely give the striking edge to Fishgold. Jason Knight, When obviously Makwan fought last,
in Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a crap performance, to be honest with you, from Makwan. Looked very, very.
Was that his last fight?
Yeah, it was. He was very underwhelming in that fight.
And only fights in the UK usually.
We talked about that. It was a poor performance. It was very underwhelming from Makwan, and I think obviously that loss to Arnold Allen, which is obviously no disgrace. Arnold's a fantastic fighter.
Can I just congratulate you on saying Arnold Allen?
Yeah, for the first time ever.
Wow.
Well, yeah.
You've been practicing that one, buddy.
And then, you know, the fight that really stood out for me was when Makwan beat Mike Wilkins.
Yeah,
that was a fantastic performance from Makwan. I think we saw a little bit of everything. Very strong, as you said, in top position in that fight.
Incredible grappler.
It is. I think it's going to be a close one here, but I'm probably going to favour Fishgold. Just that raw sort of power.
I'm very interested to see that one. Because I feel like that's a big pop for Fishgold if he beats Makwan. Makwan's very popular, especially in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
Mr. Finland, no
Mr.
less.
Mr. Finland, who lives in Ireland.
Does he live here?
Well, most of the time, yeah.
I saw John tweeting there recently that he's lost his way to his accommodation.
Yeah.
He was like, I forgot where I live. He just came back to the gym.
he gone around eating an apple, was he, Makwan?
Oh, man.
He owes me 100 quid still.
Oh, well. Christos Giagos versus Damir Hadzovic. Hadzovic is a nightmare. He's underrated, as far as I'm concerned. He never makes it easy for any of his opponents, and he's on a 2-fight win streak now. Nick Hoyne and Paulo Reyes. Christos Giagos, do you know much about him, buddy?
No.
I can't say I do either.
No, I don't.
I'm going to quickly look up his record and pretend I know. He's fought in the UFC twice. He is an ACB veteran. He lost to Charles Oliveira.
Oh,
Jesus, baptism of fire. And then Masutu Hirata, he took a win over him last December. So, you know, could be a very, very important fight for him to win, to be honest. Elias Teodoro will tell you as much. Hadzovic is very underrated as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Daniel Timor's fighting there as well.
Good old Danny.
Needs a win.
Fighting undefeated Sunbin Joe. That's a dodgy one, isn't it? Like, I mean, just given the circumstance, you're going in against an unbeaten guy.
Three straight, I think he's lost, Daniel as well. He hasn't kicked on maybe the way a lot of people thought he would have. Fishgold obviously beat him last time out. Big, big test. Tough one there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Rustam Akman making his debut, Superior FC veteran. It's going to be interesting to see against another debutant in, Sergei Kanzoko. So, yeah, not much interest going on that one, I can tell you.
Yeah.
Tonya Evinger v. Lena Landsberg. Like, I mean, Tonya's not had a good run with the UFC. And, I mean, she was so heavily billed coming in. This is the Diaz sister, you know, they were kind of saying. And she is. There's no doubt about it.
She's tough as nails.
She's a very entertaining person, too. She's a good crack. I'm looking forward to talking to her. But, it's not really gone her way with the UFC, has it?
Two very tough fights, in fairness.
Aspen Ladd's a nightmare.
You know, Aspen Ladd's class act. Really good young fighter. Cyborg, we saw how tough she was in that battle, but came up short. So, you know, maybe this is the one. I think Lena likes, you know, doesn't like, but she does take a lot of damage in her fights. And, it's going to be interesting to see the way this fight plays out, but.
It'd be a huge win for Lena Landsberg.
Yeah. Oh, massive win. But I think the way Tonya sort of gets in your face, we saw she tried to implement herself in the front foot against Cyborg, didn't ultimately work out, but pushed Cyborg very far in that fight. If she can get in Lena's face, Lena's defense is a little bit questionable at times, and I just do fancy Tonya here to get the job done. It's an interesting one, though, yeah.
Yeah, Leonardo Santos, who we remember from robbing Norman Park with that draw in Brazil.
When was the last time he fought?
I don't know, but I know he's unbeaten in the UFC still.
He hasn't fought since 2016. Just checked it there. That's a long time.
It is.
Adriano Martins was his last victory.
I mean, Leonardo was very good, though. I mean,
three-time world champion. Is that
something
right?
Like Brazil, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, yeah. And he's obviously taking on Stevie Ray, whose last win kind of went under the radar, didn't it? Against Jason Ayari. He got back to winning ways after the Cajun Johnson fight in Liverpool. Was it Liverpool or London? Not too sure.
Yeah, it was. Like that fight could have gone either way.
Yeah. And then Leonardo Santos obviously welcome him back. No way. Not the guy you really want to be going in against on your first day back.
Because
Stevie is good everywhere. You know, you can't be like, oh, I'll take him to the ground. I'll be grand. Like, I'll stand with him. I'll be grand. It's going to be a hellish night. Like,
yeah. And I think that will stand to Stevie in this one. The fact. Leonardo hasn't fought since 2016.
Because Stevie can set a big pace sometimes, you know.
And indeed. He can go all day, that guy.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nick Hoyne in action against Frank
Sergeant
Camacho.
Nick Hoyne.
Yes, Frank Camacho. Two losses on the trot there for Frank. And I believe Nick... I don't think Nick's got back to winning ways.
No, I don't think so.
No, he's on two losses. Yeah, he fought Demir in Hamburg. That's right, split decision loss. That was a big one for Demir, to be honest.
Stoshish Clark stands out there for me.
Yeah,
in those fights.
Yeah, it's definitely. We'll just mention Duda Santana's taking on Bay Malecki, a 1-0 fighter. That's interesting for the UFC.
That is interesting. Yeah, very interesting.
I don't really know much about that. That's not usually the criteria for signing someone. So, yeah, Devin Clark and Darko Stosic. Look out for Stosic, man. He's an absolute animal, man. He kind of reminds me a bit of Roberto Saldic if he was 205.
Yeah.
So, yeah, check him out, man. He's really good. I was there for his debut. I think that was in Hamburg as well. And then Delino Bellardo and Yoel Alvarez kick off the action at Italy versus Spain. Be a good football match anyway.
It would.
But, yeah, I mean...
Is this car going to fly under the radar at the Champions League final?
Oh, yeah. Oh, like a very poor decision to do a European fight card on the same night as the European.
They did it. They did it a couple of years ago as well. I remember being in the media room, and I think it was Real Madrid, and we're playing maybe Borussia Dortmund in the final. Yeah, or Atletico.
Who cares?
Yeah,
they did it before on the Champions League final.
It's just silly. Some of the they don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
About Europe.
Yeah, yeah, it seems like a bad decision, all right. Cage Warriors 105 goes down the day before in Colchester. But you know James Webb, the Colchester native, because he's getting ready for his Cage Warriors 106 title fight, of course. But on the main card, Sean Carter v. Tim Barnett. And if you, let's go a call back to what we talked about earlier, Reese McKee and Alex Lahore's exchange. Lahore seemed to say,
Reese,
if you want to fight Tim Barnett, then we'll see if you're good enough to fight me. Tim Barnett is back at 55.
Yeah, makes just zero sense.
Reese has already actually avenged the loss to Tim Barnett, of course. But both guys finished each other in the first round.
Yeah.
You know?
But still, come on, I think.
And Reese has gone to 170. Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't at all.
That's an interesting fight, though. Tim Barnett and Sean Carter. Two goers, man.
Again, though, we were chatting about this there a few minutes ago when we were playing the interview there. Sean hasn't fought for nearly 2 years.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
McColgan was the last man to put hands on.
I couldn't believe that, yeah.
Yeah. Two beautifully curly men.
Yeah. It's going to be a very interesting one here. I think Tim as well really needs something, to start happening. He just comes across sometimes, and I know he's coming off that win against Ventura, but, you know, lost to Alex, lost to
Reese. That was a great fight, man, Ventura.
It was, but I think he needs to really make a statement here. Yeah. To really solidify himself.
But I will say this about both of these guys, Carter and Barnett. On their night, they look unbelievable. Yeah. They look like, I mean, when they are at full tilt, they look unbelievable. Yeah. Both of those guys do.
Yeah, I love watching Sean fight. And I remember,
he's a real crowd favourite as well there with Cage Warriors, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Ever, probably since the night of the tournament they did, the lightweight tournament.
Yes.
That was, Sean looked absolutely fantastic in that tournament. It was a great night. Stevie Ray was obviously there as well. And
Carl Warburton.
Yeah, that's right. That was a great night. And I think that sort of endeared him to, as you said, Cage Warriors fans ever since that night.
And his delicious curls.
Oh yeah, like yours, Pete.
Oh, thank you. Donovan Desme, I believe he stepped in on short notice to take on Alexander Jakobsen. That's a big fight at 55 as well.
Yeah, it's a decent card for obviously.
Yeah, we know that, you know, I think with the deck so stacked at 106, they've done a good job to put together a card at all. Aidan Stevens is a prospect to watch from Scotland, and Steve Amiable has looked fantastic lately. You know, Amiable is one of those guys, didn't have the best start to his career, but now we saw him against Decky McAleen, a guy who everybody's very excited about over here. He really, really devastated it.
Just, you know, taking him off his feet and putting him on his ass. And
this is a good route for Amiable. I like the fact that he's taking on all these prospects, you know, like, I mean, McAleen, and that was a big pop for him that night, I feel. And I think the same, if he can manage to get through Aidan Stephen, it's going to be exactly the same thing.
100%. It's a good way to sell yourself, a good way to great matchmaking out there. Yeah, yeah. No, for him especially as well, to be taking these fights, as you said, way more noticeable if he's taking out these prospects than, you know, trying to massively sort of build yourself up in a longer run.
Absolutely. Also want to mention the fact that Corey McKenna's back in action there against Julia Chinello.
Tough wee lass.
Yeah. I don't know if she's been over with Uriah again. I'm not too sure. I think she might have. I'm not too sure on that though, but she obviously got back to winning ways against Fanny Redmond at Cage Warriors 104. And, she get back, get the old win streak going again. A lot of people very interested in Corey. Such a young person, and she looks so young as well when she's in there.
She looks like she's about 12.
Yeah, yeah, she really does. It's unbelievable to see her and how tough she is and durable. It's insane,
unreal,
man.
Isn't it? Unreal.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Nice, tough little.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be tough if, you know, Paddy's floating around. You've seen wee Paddy.
Your nephew Paddy
is
hell on legs is what he is.
He's absolutely nuts.
He probably batted the two of us.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
But, so basically I wanted to chat with Miles Price because, to be fair to Peter Queeley, when he was talking about him the other day, he was like, where is Miles? And I was like, actually, where is he? Where is Miles? You know, like I mean, in terms of, Peter has been matched, you know.
He's a gym and stuff, isn't he? Yeah, looking after Kenny.
Well, it's good to just, because when Peter kind of said that, I think a few people have got on to me going like, and I'm not from Team Rhino, guys, to be fair. They were kind of saying to me, is this another slight? Like, is this showing the SPG favoritism? But Miles clears it up. Like, I mean, they did offer him a fight in June, but he is going to be away in San Jose. So that isn't going to work out. He's going to target that September fight now.
Is he away in San Jose, is he?
Yeah.
All right.
Why?
Mr. Habib fighting in August.
I know, it's a good time to go. We talked about that as well. But he obviously talked about Peter's comments about Peter now, it feeling like he won the fight. People saw that interview. He also talked about how he wants to fight Chris Bungard in September. And now Queeley and Miles Price have gone in on that. And he also had some things about to say.
Can I just, before we go to it, why does Peter do that?
Why?
He always comes up with these things afterwards. Oh, you know, it feels as though he's won the fight now.
Yeah.
Like, this is a reoccurring theme. A lot of the time, or it seems like...
Well, I think with fighters in general, isn't it?
No, yeah, but it's just a bit, like, just let it go. You didn't win that fight, man. I didn't think he won the fight.
No, but I will say, like, the one thing I did kind of say from that, like, he won so many people's respect when he did that interview 100%. Straight afterwards.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. We talked about that. It was brilliant to come out and say you wouldn't...
But at the same time...
Believe me, you wouldn't get a lot of guys doing that.
And look, I take that moment as that moment. He said it then, and that's that. And I also have to remember that this is professional fighting. This is prize fighting.
Yeah.
And you have got to say, if there's even a question, you have got to say, I won that fight.
Yeah.
You've got to.
I agree. Totally.
I don't think it's going down well with some people. But what can you do? You know, you're not here to make friends. You're here to make money.
Peter's got to create controversy.
Look at the Bungard thing. I mean, people are
talking
that
eyes on it. Yeah.
Like the Scottish guys are coming out. Peter Queeley's this and that. The Irish guys are going back at the Scottish people. Mm. Like, and this is what I said to Miles. I said, like, as far as Miles is concerned, Terry lost to Chris and Peter lost to him, so he should fight Chris. But I was like, this is the sports v entertainment debate again. There's a lot more people talking about Peter Queeley and Bungard because of that sparring picture. So what will win out? This is Bellator. They need eyes. They need compelling storylines. Look what Miles Price and Peter Queeley did the last one. Yeah. I mean, that was by far the most intriguing fight.
People's main event.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, maybe I'll just let Miles say this for God's sake. Jesus Christ, talking shit all day here. So here's Miles Price. He's actually on holiday in Spain and he still took this phone call. So fair play to you, Miles. I really appreciate it. And thanks for clearing up all of our questions. We'll be back in about 15. Now, I am joined by none other than Miles Price. And I wanted to talk to Miles, especially because I talked to Peter Queeley during the week, his last opponent who he won by a split decision. And, you know, Peter asked a good question, like, where is Miles? And that's what I want to know. Where is Miles and why doesn't Miles Price have a fight lined up yet? That's my question, Miles. And how are you, by the way?
I'm not too bad, Paisley. Thanks very much. It was great to be on here chatting with you again.
Yeah, man, always a pleasure to speak to you, man. But I guess that's where I'd like to start it off. I mean, first of all, have you had any contact from Bellator since that big win? I saw that win as a launch pad for you. Whoever was going to win that fight was going to be off on a good run with Bellator as far as I was concerned, but we've yet to hear if you have another fight lined up. What's going on there, bud?
Yeah, well, I actually was in contact. I was chatting to Jude and we were talking about a fight in June. And to be honest with you, I just have too much going on in regards to my gym at the moment, just developing it and pushing it to another level. Because you have to remember, like, I want to make sure that I keep on top of everyone, like, just keep everyone on their toes in regards to my fighters improving so that they can be there for the gym while I'm away, because, you know, when you're training for a fight, you really do have to, like, kind of be selfish and focus just on the fight and sacrifice a lot for it. So I'm there for the guys, but I'm not in a lot of ways. So I really do want to get more. I wanted that little bit of a gap for personal reasons as well. Like, I wanted to improve and add some new aspects to my game even more so again. Like, I added the wrestling to my game for the last camp. And now I just added a few new tricks as well. And I got to really work on the athletes in my gym and help the growth of my gym. And it also would help me to just save up for the start of my next camp, which is going to AKA again and then run into September with the guys up in HQ and Team Rhino.
Right. So, I mean, it isn't a case of Bellator not trying to match you. It's just that at the moment, it doesn't really work out for you. I mean, June isn't an ideal situation for you, basically.
Of course not. No, of course they were looking for me to fight in June. Sure, it was ideal for everybody that fought in the Irish card and on February 23rd on that night to be fighting again in June, like, because it was perfect timing in between. But I just chose to ring Jude, be very straight with him. He's a great guy. He's a friend of mine, I consider, at this stage also. So he completely understood my situation. And we're going to be looking for a fight in September and then in December as well. So we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because just when I was talking to Peter that time and I knew the interview was going to go out, obviously, and I was thinking, is this going to kick off the whole SBG favoritism thing? But from what I'm hearing from you, you're happy with your situation there.
Oh yeah, I was very happy with my situation. I chose to be where I am and to fight in September and December, because I do need to. I miss being a bigger part of my gym when there's no fight coming up, you know. Right. And it obviously competing on high level stages like that and being part of fights like that is like a big part of doing things for the gym, because it's obviously like
putting,
you know,
in the shop window, basically. Yeah.
Of course it does, yeah, but I also need to invest just my time with the guys as well, you know, like teaching and training with them individually and bringing them places to train with me and, you know, and all that. So I need to find that fine balance, that's all, you know. And I think Peter's just making himself feel a bit better by saying that. He's kind of rewrote out a list, I think, as to the reasons why they didn't and how he's the favourite. But, like, he would say that, wouldn't he? Like, that's just the nature of the game.
I was wondering, like, did you get to see his comments on the fight? Like, I mean, I think Peter, to be fair, a lot of people were, you know, full of praise for Peter when he came out after the fight and he spoke to the media. It's always tough to take a loss and to do that. We always kind of take off our hats to guys who do that. But it seems like now that he's watched the fight, he's seen some polls online and he's very confident that he won that fight. Does that leave a bad taste in your mouth? Because it seemed that everything was kind of squashed between you guys that night.
It doesn't really leave a bad taste in my mouth, because I try not to connect myself with how Peter feels. I just feel like I'll just connect with that kind of attitude then, and I'll just become that attitude. And I'd rather just accept the way the way he acted after the fight, I thought was very respectful, and I was very impressed with how he went on. And I thought that he was going to really grow as an athlete because of the way he conducted himself after the fight. And now I just feel like it was all fake, and he just wanted to be more superficial about it, just be more kind of just come across like that, so people thought better of him. And I know, I think that he's just kind of like his real kind of outlook on what happened is come out now in his recent interviews and as time has gone on. So that's how I kind of feel about it now anyway.
are you happy with, like, the level of kind of, it feels like to me that your stock got pushed up an awful lot from that fight. I mean, like, it was the fight that everybody was talking about, you know, and the result mattered. You could feel it when everybody's standing waiting to hear that decision. It mattered to the people that were in the crowd. Do you feel like you got the payoff from that, like, from getting that big win, a huge grudge match? Do you feel like you've got the payoff from that?
Of course I do. Yeah, I feel like that. I definitely got a lot of recognition because of that fight, and I got a lot of respect because of that fight. And they're the type of fights I want to be part of. Of course I do, you know. But I want to do it in the right way, where I'm just purely speaking my mind, like the first interview we did when I was overtraining in AKA, you know, when I'm just purely speaking about how I feel. And If it builds great hype around the fight, then I'm going to go with that, of course, you know. But in my opinion, my stock did raise in the fight, and it's going to follow through into September and then competing in December as well, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, talking about that September date, I mean, we don't, us media guys anyway, we don't know what date they're planning for that Irish show, but every Irish fighter I talk to that signed to Bellator is talking about September and how they want to be on that card.
Yeah.
Are you certain you will be on that card, and do you have a preferred opponent you'd like to face in that situation?
That's a bit of a double barrel question there.
I'm sorry about that, Miles.
That is, sorry. You always throw the tricky questions at me, don't you, Percy?
I've been waiting for this for months.
I'd like to fight with Chris Bungard, actually. I think that makes sense, seeing as Peter's fighting Brazier. And I think Chris Bungard's a very good fighter as well. I think he's tough. He's durable. And I feel like that, I mean, like, you know, he bet Brazier. And I think that, like, obviously, I bet Peter. So the two winners should compete against each other. And I think he's just making himself feel better by putting up that post about Bungard, the sparring post. I honestly feel like that. I understand how people hype up fights and stuff like that. Like the likes of Richie Kiley, he hypes up fights very, very well. But you know, he's a really good guy too. I know Richie Kiley, and he's a really good guy. And I feel like Peter actually believes this stuff that he says. And I feel like that it's an unspoken rule within the professional fighter community, like, and just in martial arts and just athletes in general, martial artists in general, that you don't boast about how you beat somebody in a spar. You know, it's not really, you know, respectful. And I really don't think he should have done it. And I feel like that he genuinely was doing it as well to push up the fact that, oh, the guy I'm fighting is much better than Bungard, you know. And look, there's reasons why people don't live up to their expectations on fight night. You know, everybody makes a mistake, could be emotional, you might not have prepared right because of personal reasons or whatnot. You know, you can't judge someone a lot of the time from that. You know, like, you know, he could go in and, like, you know yourself, you go in and you compete against guys and you have up and down performances. So I feel like that was a little bit out of order, and, you know, that was it.
Yeah, and I mean, do you feel like, I mean, obviously you're saying, like, you guys both win, you and Chris, so you should fight, and then obviously we know that Peter's fighting Terry. Is there any part of you that's saying that maybe this Peter and the post that he put up, that kind of promotion, that might get him that fight ahead of you? Like, as in, it's nearly like the whole sport versus entertainment argument again, isn't it?
Yeah, I could see why it would be a marketing thing as well. Like, of course, he's trying to build up a fight and he's trying to do this and do that. But I just feel like it came across as a little bit bitter because of it was a sparring war, you know what I mean? And you can't really, but in my opinion, like, you shouldn't boast about those things, but just on a respectful thing. And Chris seemed to be, he spoke very highly of Peter, and he actually spoke very highly of him before our fight too. Like, he was saying all best of skill and all this, and he's going to smash me and all that, which is understandable, obviously, because he felt like he was part of their team. He was only supporting one of his own. So,
it's interesting. That's what I thought as well. I always saw Chris. When I talked to Chris, he'd often tell me I'm over in SPG a lot of the time. So I always saw him as an SPG guy. I guess that's why I was
particularly taken
back by the situation, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I was a little bit taken back by it too. But sure, look, it's none of my business. I'm just looking at it from an outside perspective, and it looks fun. But in a way, though, I don't want him to overstep the mark in regards of taking a step ahead of me either. Like, Peter's trying to sneak in the back door and take away from what happened that night. You know, I won that fight, and regardless of what he says in regards to performances and going, oh, lads did that to Miles in the past and whatnot, you know, like, I'm just a smarter fighter now. That's all, you know, a lot smarter fighter. I went to AK. What did he expect when I came back? You know, I was going to strike with him. I was going to dirty box, and of course I was going to wrestle. I was going to do whatever I needed to do that night, and he had to implement his game plan and stop it. If he's not able to adapt in the middle of a fight, that's absolutely nothing to do with me. He should have a better IQ than that, and he should adapt a lot faster. And that's as simple as that. If you mirror the performances and he performed like the way I did, I guarantee you he wouldn't be saying anything about his performance. Like Norman Park did that to me, and I didn't have a bitter taste on my mouth. I had a little bit of beef with Norman because of how he goes on after the fight, where he's disrespectful and stuff like that. But it's nothing to do with his performance. He was the better man that night. And I think Norman's a fantastic fighter. And if you go in there against him, it's up to you to do something about the way he fights, because he does what he does very, very well.
Absolutely. Like, and I mean, as you said to me there, I think you're planning another trip to AKA. Is that correct? I know you're in Spain at the moment, but is your plan to go back out to AKA before September?
Yeah, I'm going out June 15th. And I'm going to go for 6 weeks, so I'll be back July 30th. So I'm a little bit half the time that I went last time, but I'd rather have half the time as well, because rather just go there. Like, none, my girlfriend ain't going to be out there, my brother isn't going to be out there, so I'm going to really be able to focus, knuckle down, and just bring it to the next level again. And I miss the guys out there too. I love the training out there, and I love just kind of focusing on just training and no distractions outside of that, like, you know.
Right. And I know for a long time you had kind of told me that ideally with this Bellator situation, you'd get off to a win against Queeley and then potentially fight in San Jose sometimes, because we know Bellator is a great stronghold there. Is that still one of your goals?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I'd like to fight in San Jose. That's one of my short-term goals, for sure. You know, I'd like to get, if there was a San Jose card in December, I'd love that. Like, you know, I'm not sure what's going on in December, like, you know, but I'd like to fight then as well. And if not, I'd like to look at it. Just fighting in America in general would be fantastic. And if I had to have my way, it would be San Jose, yeah, because I'm going to start like all my camps at AK, and then when I'm going to do half and half, you know. But mainly I'd like to be there for a lot of it in HQ, because I need to be there for my teammates as well, you know. We all got to blood, sweat and tears together, you know, yourself, so.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like they don't have a really high-profile fight they'll be getting ready for over there in September themselves, you know, with Khabib and Poirier.
Yeah, that's right, actually. Yeah, I was kind of backtracking the dates, and I know that Khabib trains there for 8 weeks ago, so I'll be there for 3 weeks of his camp, so I'm going to be looking forward to that, getting a few spars with him again. It's going to be good.
Brilliant, man. Moyles, come here. Thanks so much for getting on to us. I know you're away on holidays, and I really, really appreciate the time, as always.
No, anytime. I enjoy your Pedersy. It's good. Great catching up with you again.
All right, man. Well, enjoy the rest of your holiday, and I'll speak to you soon, man.
Yeah, thanks very much, dude. Chat to you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right.
And there he was, Splinter himself. All the way in sunny Spain, huh?
Splinter, well, that's interesting.
As we, why?
It's just not, because John O'Elliott is calling me a turtle.
John O'Elliott, friend of Niall McGrath, for those who are listening.
He keeps on saying to me, he's going to come up on a Monday night, he wants to... Just get on.
Maybe he'll give us his thesis on why you're the missing link.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, weirdo.
But he's the one with the hairy back. Me and him are hairy back gentlemen. We discussed our technique for beating our backs.
That's disgusting. While we're away.
It is disgusting.
I vomited in my mouth.
But I've got to live with it, Niall. All right? We all have our crosses to bear, my friend.
That is true. I've lots of skeletons in my closet.
Jesus. I'm off to Stockholm on Wednesday. I have not been in Stockholm since a certain notorious gentleman.
Is that how long you've been?
Yeah, I haven't been there since.
I haven't been there. I was at that. Obviously, you were at that. That was the first time we ever drank together. That was the first time we ever met each other.
Yeah.
So, Jesus, gives me bad memories. I'm only joking. No, I was there. Last time I was there, I was at the Gustafsson Johnson scrap.
That was a great fight.
Redzer fought Bektic.
And Siri fought...
Chris Beale.
Oh, very good. That was Siri's best performance. That was Siri's best performance.
It didn't get
fight. How many times was Siri in the fucking fight tonight and never got the money?
It's
a piss take.
Yeah, he might have bought us a pint if he'd got a few bonuses.
wouldn't bet on that.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on that either. But yeah, no, it's a good place. Obviously, brings back a lot of
and I'll be seeing Big Phil O'Connor.
Oh, unfortunately,
a Guardian Angel
Gandalf.
Oh, I love Phil. I love Phil.
What are you gonna do? Any plans?
Just kiss Phil.
That's absolutely grotesque.
It's not. Listen, I can get around that beard. Suck his beard, Jesus Christ. Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing all the Swedish guys. Asher and...
Seb. Vendel.
Seb, yeah.
Seb's a great guy.
Per. All the dudes. I'm looking forward to the fights, of course, as well. Are you playing with your microphone?
Yeah, I am. Sorry, I'm just...
I didn't know. I thought that we had some serious issues there. But Champions League final.
Yeah.
How much would it hurt you if Liverpool won that?
Oh, it's hurting already.
Do you think they will?
No, I actually do fancy Spurs. I fancy Spurs to do it. I think they have to not play Harry Kane though. I think having Kane out the last few months, they've set up differently. I think if you look
But at he's
the,
such a big personality.
Harry Hedge, like, yeah, I think we played pretty well, you know.
He's a very exciting man on the mic, all right.
Awful. But I think if they crowd the midfield and they do what they did in the game against Liverpool and Anfield, where they're all over Liverpool for the last 20, 25 minutes, boss the midfield, they'll create a chance or two and Liverpool won't be able to live with them. And I think Jurgen Klopp is a bottler as well in finals, and I think the bottle is going to continue with Liverpool. And I very much hate Liverpool FC, so
wow.
I'm very much in Tottenham. I have a lot, actually, in fairness, a lot of the lads, friends of mine are Spurs fans as well, and I hate Liverpool, so.
Well, I usually find that you're more hostile when your friends love things, that you'd kind of go against it more. That's a shock to me.
That's rubbish. How did you get that?
Just by dealing with you on a daily basis.
That's very hurtful. That's very hurtful.
Comments. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to see it because I'll be obviously working.
Ah, oh, you'll be able to. I'm sure they'll have it on somewhere. They're big foosball fans in Scandinavia, so
yeah,
you'll be able to watch it. Loads of Liverpool fans in Scandinavia as well.
Mm-hmm.
20 years yesterday since Manchester United won the treble.
Oh yeah, I was alive for that. Back 99. In the glory days when watching football didn't make me want to pierce my eyeballs with a knife.
Yeah, they're terrible sharing now, aren't they?
It's just a waste of time for me. I just can't, like,
they're just Instagram.
I don't understand
Instagram
how people don't understand that, like, I'm watching a football match to be entertained, and when I stop being entertained, I'm not watching the football match. And that's literally what's happening now with Manchester United. I mean, I'll go and see my friends. Yeah. It's like a social thing. I don't feel bound to a club. If you're playing shit, I'm gone, mate.
Mm.
I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Fair weather.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's sad that grown men cry about these things still.
Yeah, I don't.
I don't know. We remember that semi-final, Niall. Those tweets. Yeah. The funniest things. I don't think I laughed as much at anything this year. Disgusting was the term you used for that miracle turnaround.
Yeah, listen, I just hope Spurs do it at the weekend, or I'll be in bad form next Monday, believe me, you.
Oh yeah.
We probably won't talk about it.
Should I just go ahead and record the podcast with somebody else over there and send it to you?
Possibly should. It's gonna hurt a lot if they win, but you know, Leinster won the Pro 14 there last weekend, so it was alright.
Yeah, what's the Pro 14?
That's a bollocks, really. it's no Heineken Cup, which they lost.
Yeah, absolute shit match. Played like a bunch of losers.
There's a lot of sport coming up. I'm excited, but I'm not actually. I'm not. Sport doesn't excite me. I hate sport. All sports.
Well, this has been a deep dive into the mind of Niall McGrath. And lads, that's all we really have time for you this week. We'll be back with a full stocked show next week.
You're going to Portugal with me?
When are you going?
Thursday week.
Thursday week. So you'll be home when I come out.
Yeah.
And then
we'll do it.
Can you bring your laptop away?
Yeah. Always do it. I'll do it. Do it on Skype. So you can all join me on the beach in Marquinhos.
Yeah, but the single
just outside Porto.
Make sure you're in a good Wi-Fi zone, please.
No.
Well, that's all we have time for. We'll love you loads. Enjoy your week, and I will see you when I touch back down in Ireland. Well, I won't see you, I'll talk to you, you know. Love you anyway. Bye bye.